comments made on the Serotech podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotech Podcast.
Serotech Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotech Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotech.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Law.
Welcome to Serotech.
Podcast number 52 for October 11, 2010. This is Michael Loff.
And I'm Ricky Anger.
Coming up later in the podcast, we did a tech chat a few days ago on blind parenting, but I wanted to include one additional segment where both parents were blind and they had not one but two children. It's twins. Bill Sparks and Jeannie Mader share some very personal details and things to think about. And of course, you can always team that up with Tech Chat 72. Last Thursday with Ricky and Mike Calvo and Deborah Kendrick. And I think between the two audio features, it may give you a lot of insight thinking about it, or your fate is bringing you into blind parenting, or your children are still young, or you just want to reminisce about the days of old, whatever the case may be, some good stuff there for you. iPhone app, Noogle Noggles. It's kind of an interface between the Google Goggles. In a way, maybe takes Omobi to the next level. Ricky, have you played with it yet?
I have played with it, and there are a couple of things that I've noticed. With Omobi, you have the crowdsourcing to fall back on if the picture isn't immediately recognized by just image recognition, and with Noggles, you don't have that, but you still can recognize many of the same things, like money, household products, like shampoo, toothpaste, things like that, but you can't recognize more general things, such as a picnic table or something like that. It works much faster than Omobi, so you either get a recognition of the image or you don't, and you find out almost immediately if you've got something good. Then you're able to click on that result to actually bring up a Google search, which is based on that result.
See, I think this is pretty powerful because I see this a lot with just identifying products and food items and then going over to something like directionsforme.org.
That's exactly right. In fact, I did that very thing this weekend. I was going to be cooking some fridge pasta. It's just some pasta that you keep cool in the refrigerator, and I wanted to know how long to cook it, but I needed to see which flavor I had gotten, so I took it out, got a picture from Noggles, got that, and was able to look up the brand on Directions for Me, and I was good to go.
I love that site. That is open up so much information. There's foods now that I'm not going to eat based on looking at the contents of the items, but just the cooking instructions. Awesome site. Again, hats off to Horizons for the Blind. If you haven't checked it out, Directions for Me, just like it sounds.
Not only that, Michael, I've found foods that I didn't even know existed until I looked at this site. And that's one thing that we as blind people can miss out on in walking down the aisles in the grocery store. We're passing all sorts of things that we may not know about, and the person that we're shopping with may not know that we would care to be informed about that kind of thing. So it's very cool to be able to browse a site full of foods, some of which I want to go buy now.
Speaking of reviews, you posted right after our podcast your observations. You kind of compiled the thoughts of the Serotech team for the Amazon Kindle 3.
For those of you who haven't read that, you can go check it out at serotech.com. The thing that was really gratifying for me was people were forwarding me letters that they had sent to Amazon feedback as a direct result of the review that I had done. So people read it. Some of the people had looked at Kindles themselves but hadn't written up the review. So they were sending this along to Amazon and saying, this is a pretty accurate representation of where we are, and we would really like to see some effort into making this more accessible. So it was, again, good to see that people are advocating, are responding to Amazon, that we do want to see more accessibility in the Kindle.
Well, speaking of more and sometimes less accessibility, you know, the podcast 2 weeks ago, I thought about, wow, maybe I should wait a day and review the awesome new Blio 1.0 as it makes its debut. Well, probably a good thing I didn't, because unfortunately, out of the box, a product that I thought was going to be designed with accessibility from the ground up was basically unusable. Newer versions have been promised to correct the initial inaccessibility of the Blio reader that's supposed to give us access to 1 million books. I was able to actually get books downloaded with system access, and some have done it with NVDA and JAWS. Window Eyes right now is dead in the water because of the particular WPF technology, the language that it was written in.
Several things that are really disturbing to me about this release. We don't know what the behind-the-scenes reasons for things playing out the way they have. I'm really bothered by the fact that this was a chance for a lot of great partners to get together, design something with accessibility in mind from the ground up. And it's something that the mainstream press was very aware of, that it should have been accessible. So people were watching Blio for several reasons. This was released without accessibility, and it was said accessibility is coming later. But this sends the message to any mainstream companies who are watching, oh, so it's okay. Even these people who are trying to do things for the blind, they release an inaccessible product first, and then they go back and change some things. So it's really okay if we do that too and get around to accessibility when we get around to it.
And in what ways those might change with U.S. President Barack Obama signing the new Access Technology Bill and legislation mandating some described video and improvements for cell and mobile phone manufacturers to make their products more accessible. I think, Ricky, you, like myself, certainly have not read the legislation.
There's quite a lot of information there, yeah.
But we do have a link, a direct link to the text. So you can go to serotalk.com if you want to read through it now and find out what maybe now you should actually be going out and lobbying for. You're certainly welcome to do so. We've made that available for you. Speaking of lobbying, Facebook has introduced some new features last week that really got my attention and are making me feel that I need to join the bandwagon of the few people who have really been trying to work with Facebook to improve accessibility, because two new features are very cool. One of which is now you have the ability to actually download the pictures and materials that you've posted to Facebook, which some say, well, now you could take that somewhere else. But, I mean, think about it. You have other people who tag photos that you don't have possession of.
Right.
And now you have access to them, and you can download them and have them in your own arsenal, because you should. I mean, if they're tagged with your name, either you're involved with them one way or another. There's a lot of debates over tagging in general. But the bigger feature that I think could be an ultimate social networking tool for us is the ability of these new friend groups. I mean, the ability to create a group of people on any given topic. It could be your family. It could be, whether it's an accessibility project, a church group, whatever. This is a very powerful feature. And it's something that I think we're going to need access to. And it got me really using or trying to use Facebook again and realizing how inaccessible certain parts of it are, and my frustration with things that used to be very easy, like looking up people by their name and used to have the city right beside their name. But now you might have 80 people with that name and you're not sure which one you need to click on. And if you don't have the ability to see those pictures, or maybe it's someone you're trying to add and you're even talking with them on the phone, but you've never met each other before.
Yeah, I think it's needlessly complex.
I would agree with that. I got to tell you a story that's really totally transforming my concepts of social networking and advocacy. I met a lady a couple days ago, and she and probably about 800 people dedicate much, if not almost all, of their spare time to saving dogs. They're dog rescuers, and they comb all the different shelters and find out the day before these dogs are going to be euthanized. That information's posted. They have a very sophisticated network in trying to save these animals and getting people, you know, who are 501c3 that can actually go in and pull the animals out of these shelters, and a whole network of people that can drive these animals from state to state so they can get it to a person just to save their lives. And Ricky, just the horror stories that I've learned about sexual abuse of animals, animals being tied to radiators and fence posts,
wow,
and being left to die. And I want to expose that. This lady, Deanne, has a wealth of knowledge. We talked about a variety of things, about best foods to feed them. She's a big fan of dog food called ProPak. I don't know if you've heard of that or not.
I have not.
She says it's all natural. Because I said, well, what should you feed dogs? And potatoes and carrots and chicken and green beans and not all this and all the animals that are killed by a lot of crap that's put into a lot of the off-the-shelf dog foods. Very interesting conversation. I promise you folks, I will be following up on it because I'm very intrigued with it. I know many people have either service animals or just dogs as pets, but just to learn more about the extreme efforts that people are making and how they're using social networking combined with advocacy to save the lives of these animals and to try to educate people to the abuses is just truly mind-boggling.
Wow, that's a very powerful thing.
Google has been working on a project with cars that are pretty much self-driving. I mean, obviously they have people on them, but they have something mounted to the roof to really detect what's going on. And they've done over 140,000 miles of driving on the highways in California with very little human intervention, and only one incident, I guess, where someone ran into the back of one of these modified cars that they've been using. And I know you have a thought or two about this. It's interesting, again, a mainstream company creating a possible solution.
Absolutely. And I think that it is going to go somewhere. I think that just at the moment, it's in the stage of being cool research. They're probably envisioning a whole lot of things, and I don't honestly know if blind drivers ever crossed their minds. What I'm finding interesting is these cars were driven with very little human intervention, but there are still overrides so that the human can jump in and make a snap decision if necessary. So I'm curious about a couple of things. The first one is, are sighted people, if this technology does go forward and it's not really necessary to keep your eye on the road constantly, are there still going to be some safety issues where you're relying on the car, and just because you have the override doesn't mean that you're paying enough attention to be able to use it? I guess the other side of that is, if we are blind people and we want to be able to take advantage of these self-driving cars, are we going to be able to do that? Or are there going to be legal issues where it's stated someone with a working pair of eyes needs to be there to be able to override this if something goes wrong with the software in the car?
There's already, you know, so many deaths every year to people falling asleep behind the wheel, different medications, on their cell phone, texting. There's so many things that cause accidents and even death, that if a machine could intervene, the ideal scenario would be the best of both worlds. But you're right, because once people would come to expect that, they would be texting and just putting their total faith in the vehicle, and then right, someone just happens to jump out in front of them at the exact split second that the car doesn't have enough time to make a stop or detour or do whatever has to happen. But I was amazed, I mean, to say that they've already done 140,000 miles of driving in California.
Yeah, and this is heavy traffic. This is not on roads in the middle of nowhere. It's apparently working very well, even as it stands. They still claim to have a lot of work to do. We were talking about the blind driver challenge. I'm wondering if this is going to make that project no longer a necessity for those who were really interested in making it happen.
Well, you just have competing technologies. Imagine by 2020, you have two different choices of technologies to drive. I was envisioning this scenario where, okay, now we have a vehicle that can take you from point A to point B, but then what happens when you get there and you've got to traverse a parking lot or something and figure out where the actual building and destination you're trying to reach is?
Yeah, you never know where you've been parked. And I was actually thinking about the parking issue as well, because I know being in a car with my husband and other people, it can sometimes be a real challenge to find a parking spot, and you have to be aggressive in some situations where you see somebody pulling out and two of you really want that spot. I'm wondering how artificial intelligence is going to handle those situations.
Also on the Google front, they're getting rid of a service that I just recently really started using, and that's Goog 411. Well, they're getting rid of the telephone aspect of it anyway. You can still send a text and get the information, but I love Goog 411 because you learn how to use it, look up a particular store, and then maybe get four or five stores that might sell this particular product that you're looking for, and just sit there and write down all the phone numbers, or it would directly dial it for you. But Google's felt this three-year project, the conventional phone is not their space. They're trying to get in the mobile space and Android and actually texting the information. So it will still be available. And someone sent me on Twitter and said, well, there is still Bing 411, which is a service I have not tried yet.
Yeah, I haven't tried it either. I know that Google's initial purpose for doing Goog 411 was to gather a lot of voice data to be used in improving their voice recognition products. And I guess they got all the data they needed, but it's kind of disappointing. Even though there are other services to replace it, this one happened to be my favorite.
Finally, on the Google front, there's been some preliminary reviews of their forthcoming Google TV that I'm concerned about, because the reviewers not only feel that it's clunky, but the biggest thing is you're talking $300 when you already have devices out there for $99. Is it too much too late?
Even Apple TV is not something that a lot of people necessarily want to buy. Some people do, and some people say, hey, I've got streaming TV elsewhere. I don't care. $99 is more than I want to pay. And when you start talking about $300, the fact that apparently some of this hardware is kind of clunky, I don't know where this is going to go.
In the iPhone front, a new report says that we should be concerned about user privacy being at great risk because all these iPhone apps are phoning home and you say allow it to collect personal information about your current location. And software companies collect the data, and then all of a sudden there's this awesome database out there with a lot of specific information about where we go and when we go there and how long we stay and what we buy. Folks that are paranoid about it, but maybe even more personal information, entering passwords. And
even if the entire history of your personal data isn't sent, there is enough information within what is sent to actually cobble together a pretty significant chunk of what it is that you do. The UDID is sometimes sent by certain programs, and from that, your real name could be gathered. There are programs that send usernames and passwords in clear text.
As far as new apps, you have the InDaisy Reader now that's allowing people to read books from Bookshare and actually bookmark their place, actually set multiple bookmarks and move by sentence.
29? I thought it was 29.
It might be 29. Then also the Sendero Look Around, which I mentioned in the last podcast I like, for version 1.0. They've got some upgrades. Mark Taylor has a review on something called List Recorder, iPhone version of a note taker. I haven't played with that one. Have you done anything on that?
I have not yet, but it certainly looks intriguing.
But what you have done is you've gone and got yourself an iPhone 4. I'm kind of one of the last of the holdouts. You are getting some better results with the camera, but it comes at a price. So talk about your experiences when you've had it now about a week.
Yeah, in fact, I've had it pretty much exactly a week. What I've noticed is the phone overall appears to be a lot more responsive, be it typing and voiceover responds more quickly or just launching apps and that kind of thing. My previous touchscreen may have had some issues. I noticed that with this one, my letters are entered automatically without my having to move over them a couple of times before they'll actually enter. So that's very nice. Speech does sound better with the iPhone 4, though it would be difficult for me to describe how that is. I guess it's just a slight difference in speaker, so the speech sounds a bit more clear. But yes, you're right with the camera that it is better, but there are some significant differences in the way that it works. With the iPhone 3GS, I became accustomed to holding it probably 8 inches away from most objects that I wanted to photograph, whether it was for color identification or identifying the object itself with something like Omobi. With the iPhone 4, the shape of the lens is a bit different. What seems to happen is that with the 5-megapixel camera, you now get greater detail in the picture that you take, but you're taking a picture of a much smaller space than you would be with the 3GS. So in order to get as much information in the frame as you need to, you have to hold the phone considerably further away than you normally would. Scanning apps, for instance, where you might have the entire page in a frame by holding it about 10 inches above the page. With this, your arms practically have to be above your head. We're talking about 24 inches above the page to get the entire thing in the frame.
So once you become an acrobat there, it does actually work better. You do get better results with the flash?
Yes, the flash is fantastic, especially because it was always really difficult to tell if I was in good lighting. Even if I had lights on in the room, I might be in shadow and not know it. And those things are almost impossible to determine, at least they were for me. With the flash, you don't have to be concerned about that anymore. Now, for color identification, you do have to be a little more careful about what you have in the frame, because sometimes you might be taking a picture of the back of your chair rather than your shirt, just because the difference in the way the two cameras focus.
you actually have four different apps for detecting color. Is that correct?
I do. I have one called Aid Colors, and this is one which was designed specifically for the blind. It's extremely easy to use because you tell it to get color, it takes the picture, it loads the image, and it spits out a color at you. But it's a very basic color list, so you'll see blue. You won't know if it's dark blue or light blue, and that can be very important when you are trying to match clothing. I have a second one called Hue View, and it has a great color list. With this one, you've got to do a little more work. I reviewed it last year on the podcast, but you've got to take the picture, then tell the phone to use the picture, then turn VoiceOver off to touch a spot on the image, and then turn VoiceOver back on to see what color you've just analyzed. The third one I have is called iSpectrum. This one is quite nice because you can take a picture with it, you tell the phone to use it, and you don't have to turn VoiceOver off. In theory, at least, you're able to touch the image with VoiceOver still active and get a color result. The problem with it is, especially on the 3GS, it tends to get overwhelmed if you're moving your finger a little bit and the app may crash. Now, with the 4, it works a bit better, but I still run into the problem where it seems to think most of the screen is blank space, and so it doesn't give me a color match, kind of hunting around to find that color. And the 4th app I have is Thus Far for entertainment purposes only. It's made by a group called Green Gar Studios, and it's simply called Color Identifier. It uses Acapella Heather to self-voice, and it updates every 5 seconds, giving you the color that you're pointing at. Now, this sounds perfect, right? The problem is that the color table used in the app is extremely large and has some very bizarre names. If you don't know what color Ochico is, then the result that Color Identifier gave you isn't going to do you a lot of good. Now, there are times when you'll get something like Nile Blue or Royal Purple, and you'll at least have some idea of what the color is. But more often than not, you're getting color names that you've never heard of. It's a bit impractical for daily use. I have written the developer, though, and he says he will include a more user-friendly color table in the next version of the app.
So on a related note, not Apple-specific, but two new developments, some research and testing currently going on some alternate touchscreen options. And the first one, I think, is very exciting because it can actually offer tactile feedback. Imagine a touchscreen that could actually give you Braille or just some bit of information, some symbols to let you know where you are on the screen. So even if the apps put things in different places, you have the ability to find out what's going on. And a totally separate project that someone is working on, actually setting some kind of tactile GPS system that you could use as you travel and you could feel tactually as you, you know, get near to your destination that the marks move with it so that you know where you are in relationship to streets around you and the beginning and end points.
I love the idea of possibly being able to look at charts and graphs using one of these touch screens, and it's just a glass screen, but you're able to feel textures with it. I remember about 10 years ago, I had something made by Logitech called the iFeel mouse, and it uses haptic feedback to do things like show you when you're over an icon as you move closer to the edge of the window. Even in a spreadsheet, you could sort of feel the grid just by moving the mouse around, and the haptic feedback would sort of let you know that there were lines there. I think this has a lot of potential, not only as a gaming advancement, and I'm certain they'll do something in that space, but I think it could be very useful in a practical situation as well.
Oh, I got a better one. I just thought of this. It's the I Feel For You. So you're right, you're in a crowded room and you're trying to find your husband. You can just point it around until it uses the camera recognition part with tactile feedback. When you find your hubby or whoever it is you're looking for, I thought of this the other night because I went into this pub and it was kind of loud. Trying to stay with the lady I was with there, and it was kind of like, well, if I could just have Chaka Khan go, I feel for you.
That's awesome. Well, you know, there is It's a mobile app called Marco. It will show where you are pretty much exactly on a map. So even if somebody's 30 feet across the room from you, it'll show you exactly where they are rather than saying, yes, they're in the same location that you are. It's really too bad that they don't have auditory cues to go along with that. The pitch could increase as you started getting closer and closer.
On the Apple front, these are all rumors. That's all you get with Apple, of course, until they make official announcements. But rumored to be testing some new touch screens for the iMac played with the iPad. And it's kind of cool, but it's not a full-fledged computer. I want something that can do, you know, everything I could do before. So if you came out with an iMac with an actual touch screen, so now I could really see where web pages and all my apps are in relation to each other.
Oh, yeah.
And get a true computer screen layout. That's intriguing to me. If that's where they're going with this, I'm very excited about it. That's something I could see investing in. Wall Street Journal reports, and they usually get it right.
I think it's always been for real,
but no company's going to come out and say, yes, we're coming out with an iPhone, so don't buy anything for the next 3 months. I mean, people, you have to understand, a company can't announce something before its time because it would just stop and halt all sales of any existing products.
But it really does appear that the iPhone will be coming to Verizon.
By early 2011, I think within the next 3 months, but don't count on Verizon to give you advance notice of it. They'll tell you when they're ready to announce it. Mr. Jobs, he'll come up there and tell you about it. Also, in the rumor mill is a possible music subscription for $10 a month. That one I'm not as sure about because that would threaten their current existing model of getting people to go in and buy music from the iTunes store. But, you know, maybe there's enough research to show which people will buy and which people strictly use iTunes for listening to radio. So, hey, now maybe I can get $10 a month out of these people who are just otherwise using it as a nice radio.
If they do this, they're going to make this unique in some way. And I can't really imagine how yet. I gotta think it's gonna be different than something like Slacker or Pandora.
Or every song you're listening to, there'll be a nice, very easy buy button.
Download this now.
You know, and they're doing that too with their new devices with the radio, and you can upload the songs and then just purchase any song that you hear on the radio. So if you gotta have the new Eminem Rihanna, hey, here you go. In other software news, Microsoft Windows 7, the family pack, is back, well, at least for a limited time while supplies last. But again, you can get the Windows 7 Home Premium, get a family license, that's three computers for $149, but it is a limited time offer, and this was posted right after our last podcast. So if that's something you're interested in, you certainly want to go check at your Best Buy and different stores and see if you can find you a copy of that. If that's what you want to get Windows 7 Premium. So even if you have two computers, it's probably worth it because you might need a third license and add a machine down the road. Jamal Masri has put up a page at empowermentzone.com with all of the apps that he's written. And he's written quite a few more that I was not even aware of. So you can get the link to that at serotalk.com, or I'm sure it's right on the front of that massive page at empowermentzone.com. Ed Sharp, which is a great, awesome text editor.
Yeah.
And his PDF to TXT, which I use. He's done a lot of other stuff as well, so you can check that out. Quitter 4.5 has just recently been released.
And as always, great work from Mongoose Q and the rest of the Quitter development team. By the way, if you have not voted for Quitter client in the Mashable Awards, you may want to do that. We'd love to get some mainstream coverage of something that was developed specifically for the blind. The category that you want is best use of an API. So with 4.5, got a lot of interesting new features. The social network feature is one that I particularly like. You're able to bring up your friends and followers, and you can do a couple of different types of analysis. You can see the people that you are following who are not following you back. You can see those that are following you that you haven't followed back yet. The third option in social networking is to see your entire list of people who you both follow and who follow you back. One thing that this version has gotten mixed feedback is the ability to very easily send up an audio post. I think it's fantastic. It's a lot like the sighted folks using TwitPic and these types of things to show off their photos. And you can now do this type of thing with your audio, posting to QAudio. So it's being stored on a server maintained by the Quitter developers. And you've got some people saying, don't you people have anything better to do? You're wasting my time having to listen to all this audio that you keep posting. Then there are the people who want to post with nothing but audio. I have to say that I do appreciate when people give a subject in the tweet which has their audio post, so at least you can tell whether or not you want to go and listen to that audio.
Other news, Windows Live Essentials 2011. You can play with that if you're into it.
No, I don't have any... full of ribbony goodness, apparently.
Yeah, ribbony goodness. So if you like or don't like ribbons, well, even more ribbons. Microsoft has decided ribbons are the way to go. To me, it's bloated for what I do. I use Miranda. I mean, all I want to know is when I get a instant message. I don't really like the Windows Live Mail, and I have no interest.
Yeah, I have no desire to play with it either. I've got SamNet with IMAP for my mail, and I use the Socializer or Miranda for instant messaging, and both those things are very lightweight, and that's just what I want.
Patch Tuesday, again, Microsoft out to break another record for the most updates, especially ones requiring restart, so it'll depend, of course, which version of Windows. But for most people, there's at least 16 updates coming out, with 8 of them requiring a restart, so hopefully they can install many of them. I don't know how many actual restarts you'll have to go through. And the main reason I mention that is this week, folks, if your computer's not working right, just look down in the system tray and see if you got some pending updates and just, you know, get them deployed, because that's what I hate, and that's why I set mine to only tell me that the updates are available, because otherwise something just quits working. You know, downloads the updates and says, hey, I'm ready to install them, but just things just don't work. And, you know, something, you never know what it is. There's no consistent pattern to it. So if your computer's wigging, look down in the system tray this week and get those updates deployed. And I envy people who do tech support and have to deal with that crap. Linux front, you have
Ubuntu. Ubuntu, I guess we should say.
Ubuntu, yes. 10.10, I call it, or 10.10, or whatever they call it. Other just general news of interest, just some things you might want to pursue. Gizmo has the free 15 security point checklist. A lot of good tips for users of PC. They've broken them down specifically for office workers or managers or individual families, even children. October is PC Security Month, among other things. What is it, White Cane Month and Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and a lot of things in October, which is one of my favorite months of the year.
It's Awareness Month.
Well, there's a new form of baseball for the blind. It's an interesting game that's been created. This is a gentleman by the name of David Bailey down in Daytona, Florida, who said, beatball's too generic. You know, just whacking the ball off the cone is just, you know, it's not getting it for me. So this is kind of a hybrid baseball dodgeball game that they're trying to get started. And they're trying to set up 8 co-ed teams so guys and girls can play it. So a little more realistic like baseball. I don't know all the specifics on it, but you can go over and read the article at serotalk.com if you're into that. I don't know if any of you ever played beatball. I remember playing that as a kid. It was kind of cool.
I did play it, but I seem to have a bizarre magnetism where balls that may have been thrown the complete opposite direction of me would somehow come flying toward my face. So I tend to stay away from flying sports equipment of any type.
Another interesting article I posted was 37 productivity tips for working from anywhere. Serotech has a wealth of tools for remote access. So you can get into your computer at home, you can get into your office computer, you can get to your laptop. But the technology in and of itself, unless you have the skill sets to take advantage of that, the ability is great, but you need to have the skill sets to get you in the right mindset. It's a great article. If you work from home, self-employed, whatever the case may be, or just want to read a well-written article with some great suggestions, I would encourage checking that out. Well, there's some new BIOS is coming forth, and of course, that's your basic input-output system and the thing that kill a lot of blind folks, because if something goes wrong and your BIOS comes up, well, you know, we have no speech, and then it's time to get a sighted person. Of course, some folks don't have that, and they end up paying somebody $60 an hour to get their BIOS going. So it is exciting to see that really what is kind of an outdated technology, there's some new solutions coming down the pike that will boot within a few seconds, and I've heard that Intel's working on something that you'll have instant on. A lot of people like note takers because they can turn it on within 2 seconds. They're working. Maybe the next couple of years, some new motherboards will afford many of us that option, you know, for our computers too, and hopefully reduce the amount of snags that can prevent us from having a talking screen reader as we boot and get Windows started.
Yeah, and hopefully there will be a way to configure these things without sighted assistance. I know that there are some manufacturers who actually made it possible for you to use a web interface or a program that they had written to make changes to the BIOS when the computer had been booted up, so that the next time you restarted it, those changes would happen in your BIOS. And again, hopefully we see a way to configure that stuff accessibly.
AT&T is upping their early upgrade fees for smartphones. Many of them that have been $75 have now jumped up to $200. As of now, the iPhone is still excluded from that. We talked earlier about the Braille Wizard. There is an actual website, braillewizard.org, if you want to find out what Dean Blasey's working on. Hopefully a more cost-effective and functional alternative to Note-Taker, if you're in the market for that. But my final story is a post that I think's caused a little bit of debate on Twitter and other venues, and I'll let you comment on that, Ricky. And that's the top 10 misconceptions about blind people.
Well, I happen to agree with quite a lot that was said there. They talked about how blind people are considered to always be musically talented and appreciate music. So you're either listening to or playing music all the time. That's certainly not true. Blind people get somewhere by counting steps. I've certainly never found that an effective way to travel. And I'm not really sure how that misconception started. Maybe there are people who do that, but I've never met one. The ones that I had to laugh about were that blind people have the sort of superhuman senses, whereas it's more likely that they just have learned to pay a little more attention to what those senses are telling them. The reason that I laughed was blind people have superhuman senses, including hearing, but you have those people who say, "Honey, what would you like today?" in a very loud, slow voice. Now, if I've got superhuman hearing, why talk to me like that?
Well, that's because you're blind and you got super hearing, but maybe you're a little slow and I need to
right.
talk to you. Like that. You want some Browley? I'll never forget that on the airplane.
And apparently, according to this, all blind people read Browley or Braille. That, sadly, is not true, much as I wish it were.
I was trying to get the comment about the guide dog versus the cane.
That was the
hot button.
Yeah. So none of this sounds particularly controversial thus far, but one of the things was that blind people, was it travel better with guide dogs or can't travel at all without a guide dog? The person who wrote the article sort of had some interesting things to say. He said that he traveled better with a cane, which is fine, but he also said, oh yes, and it's very hygienic as well, and I don't allow guide dogs in my apartment. Just some other things that were a bit disparaging, saying that cane travelers actually worked a little better than those who traveled with guide dogs. And that was the thing that I think a lot of people took option with, including me.
Coming up in the Land of Tech Chats, of course, our most recent one on blind parenting on October 7th. Coming up the 14th, we're going to talk about some of the larger desktop video magnifiers. So Magnasite and Optilec will be joining us, and perhaps others, and your questions and comments. October 21st, it's been about a year since we've done one, so we're going to come back and talk about the latest and greatest iPhone apps, and hopefully you, Miss Ricky, can join us for that one.
I'd love it.
Very interesting. And of course, as we'll do at the end of the month on the 28th, it's this month in Access Tech. We'll see if anything new and exciting is announced at the ATIA event going on in Chicago. With that, we hope you've learned something today, and stay tuned for, I think, a very interesting interview talking about two blind parents raising twins. And we will meet you again on the 25th.
Stay connected and stay directed.
On our subject of blind parenting, I'm speaking with Bill Sparks and Jeannie Mader, because we certainly wanted to include a family where both parents were blind. Double the pleasure and the double the fun, they also had twins. And I understand that got you a lot of national publicity, right?
Yes,
back in 1982?
Yes, it did.
PM Magazine, and it took 12 hours to film all of that and 8 minutes of a show.
Yeah, I was nursing both of them at the time, so it was a real challenge. And the only reason we did it was because I mean, you know, people have so many questions.
Welfare decided, geez, I don't know if these people are capable of being parents, or did that happen even before the TV coverage?
That was before, actually. Somebody from the church called Welfare, and they called me and wanted to know, you know, they wanted to set up an appointment, come, and, you know, and I said, I don't need no, you know, I really don't need any help. I said, the only time I get, you know, free time was bathing them.
Did you have any help or support from family members?
Actually, my mom came. It was maybe 4 or 5 weeks. Most times, it was just us.
It was one of those things where once the novelty wore off and...
Most time, it was just us.
So what was the most difficult challenge?
Actually, the most difficult was old enough to be potty broke. That was one of them. When I began to walk where they were old enough to walk, and I put harnesses on them and connected them so they would be connected. And I taught them to hold hands. And, I mean, that was a challenge because I had a fear of somebody, like, you know, taking one of them, or you never know, you know. Or one of them falling, I wouldn't know it. So I kept harnesses on until they were about 5 years old if we went out in public. And I had a lot of, you know, I got a lot of... adverse, you know, got a lot of opinions on that one. People were very opposed to it, you know, but I had to do what was best for me.
Would people just come up and say something, or you just hear them talking about it, or?
I went shopping to get some shoes, and the guy said, you know, he said, you ought to be turned in, you know, you ought to be turned in for this. And I said, turned in for what? You know, they were sitting there being quiet. They weren't having a problem with it because they had harnesses. We were waiting to be waited on, and I just got up and I said, well, if you got a problem, so do I. And I walked out of the store, you know. I said, I don't have to have your business. And I just left and went to another shoe store, and no one said a word.
At what age did they get to before you felt you didn't need to use the harness in that way and then found an alternate way to travel with them?
They were probably, you know, 5. Still taught them to hold hands. That way we knew where they were, you know. And then we started maybe taking... One of us would just take one, and one would take one. And when they were little, you know, infants, I would pull them around in a twin stroller. I probably wore out 2 or 3 of them, but I had a guide dog, so we did a lot of walking.
So how did that work where you navigated the stroller and your guide dog?
I pulled it behind me, and then we graduated to a wagon that we had built, and we put some infant seats that you put in bicycles, and we had somebody build that. They had their seat belts, and they were strapped in the wagon, and we loaded it with groceries. That's how we did the grocery shop there.
Did you have any problems with the school system or just trying to stay on top of their educational materials?
If I had one regret, I guess that would be, that's when I wish I could have been able to see when they started school. It's a preference, I guess, of people when they have twins, whether you want them separated or not. We just felt like it was best to leave them together, and we did, until they got to the fifth grade, I think, and they fought us on that one. That was one challenge, and another challenge was the homework. The school send out printouts, you know, handouts. You know, they give a paper, and the kids are supposed to know what to do. Well, I mean, sometimes they don't understand, and a lot of times they would just tell me the kids didn't want to do it, and sometimes maybe they wouldn't want to do it, but most times I found out when I took them to, had a friend that we could go to their house, and they helped, you know, they helped the kids do the homework, showed them what to do, and then they understood it. That is a regret. I think it was hard on the kids that way.
What about extracurricular activities like scouting or Little League, or did they do anything like that?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. We were lucky because a lot of the preschool kids that the kids knew, I got to know parents because I had to work out rides and things to get them to preschool, and it was funny because they all ended up going to the same grade school. We had to work out rides, and if you didn't have a ride, they just didn't go.
We did a lot of baseball, softball, and we really got along with other parents of the teams, and we were all a very close-knit group.
As a parent, you have to be aggressive, not really pushy, but you got to not be afraid to ask, you know, look, you know, I need a ride, you know, I want to put my child in this or whatever. And, you know, sometimes it works out where you just, you know, a ride doesn't work out. But I was lucky, but I didn't give up either. Something the kids wanted to do, I just kept asking. If schools, you know, really think you're interested in that, you're trying to work out for your child, a lot of times they'll look on their list and see who lives around your area. And, you know, they might talk to the parent, get permission and give you the phone number, and, you know, and then you start talking. And but you know, as a parent, you have to be willing to talk to these parents just out of the blue, you know.
So you did network with other parents. Did you do any specific networking with other blind parents just to get ideas? Of course,
I had a good friend that was a blind parent, and she was helpful. You know, we had another family, but, I mean, everybody's different in how they raise their children. I didn't want them to feel like they had to take care of us, and I've seen that happen sometimes to where young children are, I don't know, they feel like they have to take care of their kids, and, I mean, they have to anyway. They end up doing things for us anyway, you know, but I didn't want them to feel like that they had to, so I tried to, you know, that's one reason why I had a guide dog. I taught them, you know, they could ride their bikes with me while I walked, and you know, I taught them the way at the corner, and, you know, when I caught up to them, then we would all cross the street together, and, you know, when we would go shopping, the store clerks would just assume the children were going to be the ones to help us. There again, we'd have to be forceful and say, look, you know, these are our children, they're not, we're asking you for our help, and people, they think that's why you have kids, so they can take care of you.
So did you read to your children?
I had a lot of twin vision books. Back then, I had a lot of Disney books or the books and tape. They were like books and your cassettes together. And I brailled the books and I brailled the cassettes so that I would know what matched. But then I did not realize until later that they're color-coded a lot of times. So the kids, you know, they would learn to pick out their books by the colors. And then I'd double-check them with, you know, the braille and stuff that I had brailled. And I had somebody help me do that. And I also had flashcards that I, you know, actually had somebody help me braille. And that was a big help, like with shapes. That was one way. And I had some of the Twin Vision books. There's a book club through National Braille Press that they offer a book every month where, you know, parents can choose to buy it.
Did a time come when maybe one or both of them might take advantage of your blindness, or maybe not even blindness, just sometimes children will try to sneak around their parents?
Yeah, I mean, I think it happens with all kids, but with us, they know you can't see. You know, you got to be real, you know, real firm about your boundaries. I mean, even when they got teenagers, they snuck out of the house and stuff just like other kids do. When I found out about it, I had to deal with it. There was a time when they were skipping school and bringing all their friends here in the house. You know, I ended up having to bring somebody in just to stay in the house so they wouldn't, you know, so that wouldn't be an option. And then my job situation changed, and I ended up going to Evansville, and my father was around, so that helped because there was a sighted person. And the kids, they weren't real receptive to that because they, you know, they didn't like somebody seeing what they were doing. But they learned to respect him, and, you know, now they're very close.
First is, what was one thing you were kind of most afraid of and found it was really no big deal at all?
Well, I had all kinds of hang-ups for that. Taking care of the kids was my biggest fear, like changing diapers, bathing. As they got older, learning to play with them and do the things. Those were always my biggest fears, but those turned out to be okay.
I think my biggest fear was, you know, the teenage years. I thought I'd be able to, you know, talk with them, and I found out everything you ever taught them kind of goes out the window when they get teenagers. That the way with any kids, but it just hit me really hard.
You have grandchildren versus your own children. What would you do differently?
With the teenage years, I mean, if I could afford, I would choose not to work so I could be here. You know, so the kids wouldn't be skipping school and bringing everybody in the house. I don't know if that would help. I think I would try to be more aware of the slang as far as what words they use for, like, marijuana and different types of drugs. And I don't know if that would help, but I think I would try more. And I did try to listen to their music and everything because, you know, instead of telling them not to listen to it, I just tried to listen to it. So if there was some language-wise, you know, I could say, you know, you can listen to this, but I'm not going to tolerate this in the house.
I'd be a better communicator if I had it to do over again. I'd be a better listener and be as involved with the children's activities as I possibly could.
The words of the song Cats in the Cradle really ring true, that looking back, yeah, you wish you'd spent more time, and now you kind of wish they'd spend more time with you, but now they've got lives of their own, and it's hard to...
Right. I look at the kids now, and I mean, although it's hard to sit and watch them, watch things happen that you want to fix, but you know you got to stay out of, and it makes me feel good. I don't know about you, Bill, but it makes me feel good that they're doing it. I mean, you know, they may not be doing it the best, but they're doing it. That makes me feel good because I feel like they don't feel like they have to be right here to take care of us or me or be here to help do laundry. I mean, there are some blind parents and their kids are, that's what their kids feel like, they have to take care of them.
So let's talk about that a minute. You actually, certainly don't want to name names, but you've actually seen other scenarios firsthand where,
oh, sure,
the children took over and did a lot of things for them, for their parents.
Right. I'm sure you have, haven't you, Bill?
Oh, sure. The parents expect it. You have to be respected by your children. You have to be willing to do things and set an example for them and to be as normal, as mainstream as possible for your children. They don't need to pick up a perception of being dependent. When my kids come to visit, I want to be able to cook a meal for them, to do things for for them. That's never going to go away. It has nothing to do with sight. It's just one of my beliefs.
That is unfortunate because those are probably the parents we'll never hear from. That it is kind of nice and it's interesting that, you know, when your children actually get their driver's license and they can actually drive and the roles reverse a little bit, at least where they can help you do things. It saddens me to hear that there are parents that really abuse that situation and have their children doing things for them and cleaning and cooking. And it kind of reminds me of the scenario in an alcoholic family where the children, the older children, end up taking care of the younger children or whatever the case may be.
Let me give you one misconception that I learned the hard way. When they turn driving age of 16, oh, Dad, if you just get me a car, I'll take you any place. I took more taxis after that. It's very easy to fall in that trap. I've got transportation. I can go any place now. My kids have a car. Well, you find out that they have lives.
That works a little better as they get in the 20s.
But I notice that they are up here and say, if you need to go to the store or me or something, they're much more willing to.
Oh, yeah.
Totally different than where they, you know, when they were younger. I remember things happening where they let somebody else use the car and things happen and the car gets sold and everything happens.
Any other issues you want to address? Anything that maybe I haven't asked you? Any points you want to make before we close?
One thing, when they're smaller, when you take your children to the doctors, I think Bill's even done it a few times, and the doctors, it's like they don't want to believe you or, you know, I even had one say they, you know, if they ever thought I was going to abuse my child, they'd turn me in.
Or have you had this scenario where instead of talking to you, they turn around and talk to your children?
Yes, yes.
Oh, many a time. But that, that's a blindsided thing anyway. So
well, exactly. But I wonder, like, what age did they decide? Well, I want to talk to the children instead of you.
About three or four.
I was going to say, I recall that happening pretty early now that I think about it.
You have to talk, or the doctors will end up talking to the kids, and I would just butt in and say, look, this is what's been happening.
Things that I think were the whole key to the whole success was family support, but also I remember our church was very instrumental in our support. They were a key.
They were really good.
People would take turns from the church to help out, to do different things. And also, my coworkers were very, very, very good about doing things. So there was a lot of people involved that made it successful.
So it really does take a village. So maybe some parents out there thinking, I can do it all. You know, it is really the wrong attitude to have.
Don't be afraid to ask for help, especially doctors. I mean, I remember there were times when I did have to take a cab and you know, carry them both out of the cab and take open door and just try to hang on to the double stroller. That was the only way I knew to get someplace. Take the Greyhound bus and try to hold them, you know, try to take care of them both on the bus. You just have to ask for help. Not be afraid to accept if somebody comes up and says, I want to help you. You know, I'd like to help you. Don't be afraid to let them help you. If they want to help you do that, they're willing to help you fill out all the forms that you have to fill out sometimes. And that's another whole issue. I mean, I've had to just go into a doctor's office and say, I don't have no way to fill this stuff out. And, you know, they might be a little stunned for a minute, but they'll, if they really see that you really don't have help, they'll make time to help you. Be appreciative of it and you know, let them know how much you appreciate it. And, you know, that's how you get to know people sometimes, and that's how they get to know you.
So that's important, right, to thank people who are assisting you, not just expect it.
Yeah, right. You know, always thank them and say, I appreciate it. Some people just make them feel good, you know.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank you for sharing some very personal experiences. I'm sure it'll be interesting and very helpful to other, you know, new parents. We're speaking with people who have children just 3-4 months old, and they're concerned about how to go forward in the future, and I think your tips and advice will be very helpful.
I hope so.
Bill Sparks and Jeannie Mader, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
You've been listening to Sero Talk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.